This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. It's May, the month of Mother's Day. What better way to mark that day than celebrating the joy of new life? Our topic today is the do's and don'ts of pregnancies, and you'll learn about ways to maximize the health and safety both of your pregnancy and your developing baby, including steps to take before you even conceive. Joining us today is our very special guest, Catherine Lackritz, MD, Clinical Associate Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Program Director of Medical Student Education at Sidney Kimmel Medical College at Thomas Jefferson University. She's an exceptional physician and teacher, loved by her patients and admired by her medical students. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you for having me.
And I speak firsthand because I know your work and your students adore you. And I was just saying to our producer, Frank, that for years we had a women's forum where students and women physicians could act as mentors, and you have always been such a wonderful help to students and colleagues alike. So thank you.
It's a pleasure.
So Katie, there are so many issues to consider before, during, and after pregnancy, including the mom's medical history, smoking and alcohol use, her finances, living situation, all those logistics. So let's talk about first a woman who's hoping to conceive and has the luxury of time to sort of plan ahead, because she wants to get a good physical, get prenatal vitamins, all those things that we're going to talk about. And then maybe after that, we can talk about a woman who plays catch up when she finds out she's pregnant by surprise or an unexpected pregnancy, and she's several weeks into it and has to get advice pretty quickly. What are those first steps a woman should take before even considering attempting to conceive?
So any person with a uterus who's planning a pregnancy, the most important thing to have is a relationship with your healthcare provider. That might be an OBGYN or an NP or a midwife. It could be your primary care or family medicine doctor, but you want to have a visit, if possible, before a planned conception to go over a number of things, including your personal medical history and how any medical problems you have might affect a pregnancy, your personal medications, including herbs and supplements, and how those might be safe or not safe for a pregnancy, your mental health and the resources you have at your disposal, and what you're doing for mental health issues, including medications and how to adjust those for pregnancy, discussing your social health, smoking, drugs, alcohol, recreational hobbies and habits, and how those may or may not be safe for pregnancy. Also looking at your family history, and if your partner is a known person, your partner's family history, looking for medical diseases that could be genetic, looking for family histories that could trigger need for more testing, and looking for your background. Different population groups should be doing additional screening prior to pregnancy to screen for diseases that they might carry, diseases that you yourself don't have or don't experience, but you might carry the gene for. Certain populations do additional screening for those things. We would also look at safety, looking at the safety of your home environment, your relationships, those kinds of things, looking as you as a whole person helping to optimize you prior to pregnancy if possible. If you've had a previous pregnancy, looking at the outcome of that pregnancy and trying to learn how we can best serve you and your needs moving forward. We would also offer some testing and screening for you. Screening you for immunizations, for contagious diseases, for infectious history, so that we can do as much as possible prior to pregnancy to make sure you're entering your pregnancy at a great health and a great place for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So that's really, it just flows from you because it's so, it's such a great strategy and it's great to have that as a habit in your mind. Let's break that down a little bit because I don't always think people realize if they're young. I don't think everybody thinks they're young and invincible, but when it comes to pregnancy, certain conditions like diabetes or even asthma, thyroid disease, history of seizures. As you say, we want to make sure that the mom, the birth person, is up to date with vaccines. Mumps, measles, rubella, Tdap, which is tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis, chickenpox, or as we say in our house, chicky pops, hepatitis, the flu, all of those things are so important. I think people have become a little shy about vaccines since the COVID and the pandemic, but these are time-tested vaccines that really maximize the safety for your developing baby and for you. And, the other thought is if you're fortunate enough to still have your parents and grandparents in the picture, they're going to be visiting, or you're going to have people helping take care of your baby, they need to have their Tdap. Tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis updated, yes?
Indeed. So if you're planning a pregnancy, we would take an immunization history for you. And then once you're pregnant, we would do a sort of a family history of vaccinations. We would like to have every adult around a newborn have a recent Tdap shot, tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. The pertussis is the important part. Now, in adults over age 60 can get an RSV vaccine and an annual flu shot and an annual COVID shot. Those are the things that are going to help make sure that we're helping prevent disease for newborns and vulnerable mm-hmm. children.
And in utero, too. I mean, we're going to talk about nutrition and all those topics, but certain things that the mom experiences during pregnancy, am I right about this, that if a mom gains too much weight or is overweight, it increases her baby's future issues with possible obesity. Am I right about that?
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about your body in the space you're building for a pregnancy. And so if someone is underweight prior to pregnancy, we might help them encourage them to get their weight up to a target level. If they're overweight or having obesity in their kind of pre-pregnancy body, discussing how that's going for them. Ideally, holding the weight steady would be ideal. Weight loss is a very difficult topic and a huge area that I know you've talked about on prior podcasts, but depending on their age, their weight, and their personal goals and their personal health, getting that controlled prior to pregnancy can help the pregnancy be healthier. You can absolutely have a healthy pregnancy at many different weights. There's not a magical number, but good health habits prior to pregnancy will often lead to a healthier pregnancy and healthier outcome for your pregnancies. If you gain a lot of weight in the pregnancy, you might be at higher risk of birth complications. If you have diabetes in the pregnancy, it can increase your risk of certain complications. And some of those things are inevitable. We can't change the whole world, but being aware of them ahead of time and doing proactive things can help. I've had a few patients who've chosen to have bariatric surgery prior to pregnancy, where they had planning, time, resources, and had a better outcome because of it. So that's a major, major decision, a major life-changing event. But they were able to take the time to do the surgery, go through a year of aggressive weight loss, and then have an uncomplicated pregnancy because of the work they put in ahead of time. There's a lot of things that are still being, explored and tested.
Sure.
But good health prior to pregnancy is going to almost always help you have a healthier journey through your pregnancy for you and your family.
Well, am I right in saying that people who are underweight or try hard not to gain too much weight, that sometimes their babies grow up to have weight overweight because their little brains, their hormones are always hungry or telling them they're hungry, and they end up, that's a paradox that I bet a lot of people aren't aware of.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about moderation. You want moderation of all things. So if you're over-consuming, we want to work on finding balance. And if you're under-consuming, the epigenetics for your child, they might be exposed to chronic hunger signals while they're in utero. And when they're living, they might have weight struggles different than you expect. Really helping make healthy targets for health prior to pregnancy, and then using your physician and your practice team to maintain healthy growth through your pregnancy, both are important. And it's, it happens on both extremes. It's not it's not perfect, but it's about balance for everybody.
Yeah, well said. So let's talk a little bit more about those steps that we take prior to pregnancy with your hope and, to conceive. Prenatal vitamins contain folate, well, I guess it's folic acid in the tablet form, that prevents certain birth defects without going into detail, neurologic or neural tube defects, and iron, because you can, it's physiologic, it's normal to become retain fluid and become anemic during pregnancy. But that's why you take them starting about 2 months ahead of time.
Yeah. But, you know, the neural tube is lots of it's forming in the first few weeks of pregnancy. And so if you wait until you're 8 or 10 or 15 weeks to start the vitamins, you've missed that critical window while the neural tube is forming. We want every person who has childbearing potential, so who has a uterus and is sexually active with someone who could cause a pregnancy, to be on folic acid daily to prevent birth defects. About half of pregnancies are planned in this country. About half of pregnancies are surprise or unplanned. So anyone who has a chance of pregnancy should be on a multivitamin, including folic acid daily, to reduce the risk of spinal problems and neural tube defects.
Very, very good point. Because again, I think that's one of those things that people say, oh, you know, let's hope that we conceive in the next few months and they start it now. I've never heard that before, that you start the multivite and folate long before, as once you're sexually active. That's a really, if people don't hear anything else today, that's a really important one, because it's in the first 26 days of development or thereabout. Yeah.
And people always wait to see me or get their ultrasound, or they want to know which brand or which prescription or whatever. I tell people it does not matter for folic acid. Any women's multivitamin that has a little woman on it is going to have folic acid. Mm-hmm. Even the chewable Flintstones from the drugstore that are the easiest thing in the world, and even the gummy vitamins have folic acid in them. And those are something every person of childbearing potential should be taking daily. It would really reduce our country and our world's rate of birth defects.
Well, you know what? I think too, we want to talk about medications in more detail, but one of the things I read recently, we chatted about this the other day, and of course, we're just collecting the data. We're looking at these trends. There's a recent trend, and I want to make sure I'm saying this properly, that people, women who are taking the new weight loss drugs called GLP-1s, that we're seeing an increase in fertility, not in infertility, but we're seeing unexpected pregnancies, unplanned pregnancies, and they're on those medications, which that's one of those meds, since we don't know a whole lot about them yet. If you are on a weight loss drug, you want to stop that at least 2 months prior. So, and yet, ironically, it's people who are overweight sometimes have trouble conceiving. But then if you lose weight precipitously, it's maybe not the weight, but the hormone fluctuation, how do I put that into a package and say it clearly?
So the way I'd look at it is the following. If you have obesity, the adipose tissue on your body or the fat tissue can create a hormone called estrogen in excess amounts that gives you a hormonal imbalance and can impede ovulation. If you're not releasing your egg monthly, you will not be conceiving a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Weight loss in any format, through diet, exercise, through GLP-1s, through weight loss surgery, can, as it changes your hormonal balance, kickstart ovulation. And so people who have a habit of sexual practices and have never conceived or have had infertility might not have it forefront of their mind about unplanned pregnancy happening. As weight loss occurs and as our hormones rebalance, the estrogen levels can drop and that can kickstart ovulation, which for lots of people is a wonderful thing and good for the uterus and good for their hormonal balance. But it can cause an unplanned pregnancy. And we see it in our bariatric surgery patients. We see it in GLP-1 patients and in general weight loss patients. Mm-hmm. And so partnering with your providers, every provider at every visit should talk to each person who has a uterus about the potential of childbearing. You know, we do it a lot as OBGYNs, but it's a primary care issue. It's a specialist care issue. Before you're prescribing a medication or doing an intervention or recommending someone start something, discussing with them their pregnancy potential and their pregnancy plans is a great way to help make sure everyone is moving forward safely. Mm-hmm. So with weight loss drugs especially, stopping them if you know you're pregnant, but if there's a chance of pregnancy, taking preventative measures ahead of time, all of those things are the right choices to help you and your pregnancy have the best outcome possible.
So that's a good message for our listeners. And if there are any primary care docs listening, people are starting to order these meds because they say, oh, it's going to help your sleep apnea, it's going to help your diabetes, it's going to help this and that. But you have to tell women of childbearing age that that this is a real possibility. And we don't know if the drug could hurt the baby, and or, like you say, if a woman finds out she's pregnant in like 8, 9, or 10 weeks have gone by, she's missed the chance to really enhance the safety. I want to talk a little bit more about over-the-counter meds in our next segment, as well as other choices we make with social choices, smoking, drinking, etc. So let's take a little break, and when we come back, more with Dr. Katie Lackwitz from Jefferson Obstetrics and Gynecology.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor with our guest, Dr. Katie Lackwitz from Jefferson Obstetrics and Gynecology. Katie, we were really learning so much from your conversation with us about choices you make before and during pregnancy to maximize the mom's safety and the developing baby's safety and health. Let's talk a little bit about medications. And I can't tell you how many times we remind our listeners in every show, when you see your doctor, before you come, write down your meds, the names, the doses, and if it's too much, throw them all in a plastic bag, bring them with you. That's category one. Category two is over the counter. Just because you can buy something without a script does not mean that it's okay for you or the baby. It does not mean that it's healthy because you get it at a health store. That all those marketing tools, let's talk a little bit about that. Meds and then herbs and fun, all that fun stuff.
I mean, it's a great question. Many medical conditions have different treatment options for them, like asthma, like hypertension, like diabetes. And in each of those conditions, in those classes of medications, some of them are optimized or safest for pregnancy. Some are unstudied and we're unsure, and some we know to be unsafe. And so if you're planning a pregnancy, working with your primary care and or your OBGYN team to choose the medications that are safest for pregnancy before conceiving is always a safe choice. Sometimes for certain conditions like thyroid disease, we might have you switch medications during the pregnancy. We're in the first trimester, take one, and then switch in second or third trimester. In diabetes, we might look at the scheduling and the dosing. Hypertension, switching to the safest one for pregnancy, so that we're helping you have good health before pregnancy and then through your pregnancy. Some people will do a thing where they will stop their medications during pregnancy, or they're not sure what's safe and what's unsafe, and so they'll stop their treatment. And that is almost always the least safe option, because right. Your disease being uncontrolled could expose you to much higher risks. And so working with your team to either stay on the meds if they're safe, choosing the safest option if one is available, or taking a calculated risk if your disease needs to be controlled, we might take a risk on it. Drug that's less tested in the spirit of looking at animal studies or looking at other information to find what is safest for you and what is best for you and your pregnancy to keep everyone in good health. Sometimes mm-hmm. we can stop medications before pregnancy if they're not needed anymore. Sometimes we continue them, or we do a trial and error basis and see how things move forward. I have tons of patients on meds for anxiety and depression, and often they get mixed messages. Some people say, stop them immediately, you know, don't harm the pregnancy. Or others will say, what if you get more anxious or more depressed during the pregnancy? They are very vulnerable times for a person who's pregnant, and a new child coming home is another very vulnerable time for pregnancy and for emotional health, for anxiety and depression. So talking to your providers and your team about whether medications are needed, whether we should be increasing the doses, whether we can be help streamline the process. If you're on two or three different meds, maybe finding one that could help accomplish similar goals, so we're reducing those risks. But looking at medications as a real partnership opportunity, you know, I tell patients sometimes better living through science. We don't want you suffering terrible ADHD or anxiety, depression. We don't want your blood pressure out of control or your diabetes out of control. We want to protect you and your pregnancy by taking care of you that's holding your pregnancy.
Right. I remember in my early days of practice, expectant moms would have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease and would say, oh, gee whiz, we don't want them on those medications. But if we take them off the drugs and their bowel goes out of control and they bleed and become dehydrated, that's not helping mom or baby either. So
exactly.
As you say, life is a balance. Talk to the people who know. And, you know, the other category is over-the-counter preparations, herbs, even CBD. Those in particular, separate category, people who smoke marijuana, it's not controlled. You're not guaranteed. Let's talk about herbs first and then other
herbs topics. And other herbs.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that over-the-counter medications are widely available and they can help with typical, you know, aches and pains and cold symptoms. Our practice has a list of medications we deem to be safe that we'll provide you once we know you're pregnant. We will happily go over them. Things like heartburn, aches and pains, small cold things, allergies. There's a list of things that are safest to use in those categories. Mm-hmm. You want to always check everything you're taking with your provider if you know that you are pregnant so that we can make sure there's no cross reactions and make sure it's safe for you in the pregnancy. Even things like Advil or Motrin or ibuprofen, that class of medications we never recommend during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It is considered unsafe in pregnancy. We might rarely prescribe one type for a short time for specific concerns, but in general, even though it's over the counter, we do not consider it safe in pregnancy. On the flip side, aspirin. Aspirin is now being prescribed for every pregnant person an 81 milligram dose daily to try to prevent preeclampsia and diseases of pregnancy. That is a new practice guideline from 2022 that we're trying to get the word out on. People tell me equally back and forth. They're like, well, I can't take aspirin. I'm pregnant. I'm like, no, you can. It's safe. A small dose. But Advil that I know is not recommended in pregnancy, people routinely say, oh, I had a headache and I took a handful of Advil. Ugh. And I'm the one saying, hey, in pregnancy, although you've used it your whole life, this time in your life, it is not a safe choice to make. And no one has malintent. And really, one dose is probably not going to be harmful. But you need to be partnering with your provider because things as simple as that may not be obvious to you as a person living their life.
Well, and you make it so clear and you have that list. And if you think you're pregnant or you find out you're pregnant, get to that list as quickly as possible. And if you're not sure, don't put it in your mouth till you check with your doctor. That's the recurring message
and,
here.
And in a pinch, ask your pharmacist. In a pinch, use the internet. Google is not great for lots of things, but Googling, can I take this in pregnancy, pretty reliably shows you what's safe and unsafe. And same for breastfeeding. You know, there's websites like LaxMed that go over breastfeeding medication. Same idea. Making sure that we're looking at you and your family as a unit and keeping everyone in the best health possible.
So
talking about
herbs. That's what I was saying.
For herbs, the herbal remedies of the world are non-FDA regulated. So a tincture, a tea, a powder, a capsule, anything you get from one of those, you know, quote unquote health food stores or GNCs, they are without any testing. There's no regulation. There's no quality control. They can have contaminants. They can be mislabeled. The doses can vary widely from dose to dose. There are some that we recommend for pregnancy symptoms. We recommend a vitamin B6 for nausea. We recommend ginger for nausea or, you know, turmeric for anti-inflammatory properties. Little things we'll recommend, but we are going to, in general, not recommend those in pregnancy because we do not know what is in them and they can be theoretically harmful.
And I was conflating that with CBD. Even if you get a nice, neat, logoed prescription from your doctor for pain control with CBD, that's not regulated. You're still going to the corner store with the little leaves in the window. It's not regulated. So let's talk a little bit about smoking, alcohol intake, and even caffeine. We talked about social history to us as physicians is, are you smoking anything? Are you drinking alcohol? And in this case, caffeine. Have you traveled? And as we said the other day, Zika is not in the forefront of our minds, but are you going anywhere during pre or during pregnancy that we need to be on alert, check you before or during and that kind of thing? So let's talk about smoking and alcohol for starters.
I mean, they are huge topics and they are huge issues because they are highly addictive. If it was easy to stop, we wouldn't have to have conversations. Smoking cigarettes, and I include vaping in that, or smoking really anything, is an incredibly high-risk habit that is very potentially dangerous in pregnancy. I would encourage anyone planning a pregnancy to work on smoking cessation as soon as possible. We can help with patches, with medications, with lozenges, with little nicotine inhalers to wean you off the nicotine, which is very addictive. But the faster you stop smoking before pregnancy or during pregnancy, the safer it is. Of all the things we talk about, smoking is the highest risk behavior for pregnancy that people do very casually. So avoiding smoke, avoiding secondhand smoke, talking to people you live with, talking to partners and parents, whoever's around you, to really reduce exposure is a critical, critical measure. Alcohol.
Well, I think that's, I'm sorry. I think that's a really important point that people forget as well, Katie. Secondhand smoke. You can't always avoid it, but if you can, that's just as bad as smoking yourself, or maybe not as bad, but it's not good either for you or baby.
And I think about the way I answer a lot of these questions is, would I do this with my newborn in my arms?
Right.
I would not hang out with my parents if they were smoking in general, but I would especially not do it with a newborn in my arms. And I would use that argument prior to pregnancy to get your body in as good a health as possible. And then during pregnancy, that we wouldn't tolerate the behavior with a child in the room, and we won't tolerate it with a child in the uterus or a pregnancy ongoing in the uterus for things like smoking and secondhand smoke.
Well, you know, the whole issue of vaping, we've done entire shows on vaping and why it's not your friend. Okay, it was a clever idea to think if we take the tar out, people think they're inhaling steam. You're not. You're inhaling inflammatory chemicals. And, you know, you watch a TV show where a newscast where a fireman risks his or her life, a firefighter, going into a building, and they could get really sick from inhalation. Would you go into a burning building and take a deep breath willingly? Probably not. Why? I mean, God bless people who are trying to quit smoking, but especially during pregnancy, you're inhaling inflammatory particles that rev up your own immune system and do bad things to you. So whether you're smoking a cigarette or you're vaping, which has formaldehyde and acetaldehyde in it, cancer causing, or marijuana, you're inhaling funky stuff. Chew your nails, so, do something different.
Right. I think it's, if only it was easy.
It's not easy.
It's a very
right.
serious addiction. It's a very serious problem. A lot of patients turn to nicotine to help control other problems they're facing and other issues they're having, but help is available. I think the most important thing is partnership and saying to everyone, if you're not ready to quit, let's work on cutting back. If you're ready to cut back, let's push it. If you're already cutting back, let's find a quit date, a quick strategy. Let's support you through quitting. And you know, even if you go from 20 cigarettes a day to 2 cigarettes a day,
it's a big deal.
You're still a smoker. Yeah. It's a big difference. Yeah. And if you can do 2 a day, you can get to 0 a day. It's just making progress little by little and being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need a negative rhetoric, but we do need to make progress towards partnership.
And I wasn't trying to be down on people who are trying desperately to quit. It's more the vaping is not a good substitute. We have to really educate people that that's not totally innocent either. Caffeine. Do you limit your patients and say, hold the mayo at a couple hundred milligrams a day, 1 or 2 cups?
I mean, there's literature that 1 cup of coffee a day is completely safe in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. The way that I'm a buzzkill is I say it's a cup of coffee from a diner. It's not a Chocolato espresso flavor shot, Dunkin' Donut, 100 different ingredients, sugar
loka,
bomb.
Loka taka mama. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's more than a diner cup of coffee, it's not in that safe realm. So I'll tell everyone 1 cup of coffee a day is safe, or the equivalent in, you know, soda or tea. If they're craving more of that coffee, we can work on doing, like, you know, decaf or half calf, or try to kind of spread it out a little bit. It really is not the end of the world as far as habits go. It's not as risky as people think. And people working night shifts or 24-hour shifts certainly have some caffeine to get through that. If they're someone who drinks caffeine, and it's mm-hmm. fine, but trying to limit it as much as
yeah.
possible.
And artificial sweeteners, no spank me.
Not a lot of literature on that in pregnancy. But again, I wouldn't feed it to my child. Mm-hmm. I would not put that in my child's menu. I wouldn't put it on their plate. That's how I answer that question. Not great literature in pregnancy, but not recommended.
Well, you know what just popped in my head? In our family, some of our children, my sister, I'm one of 4 sisters, have elevated PKU, the chemical we heal test babies for. So PKU is phenylalanine. It's an amino acid found in artificial sweeteners that make it taste sweet. That can cause brain damage if your baby has that. So, I mean, again, I sound extreme here, but, you know your enemies. Let's take a little break and hear about this week's real champion. And when we come back, more from Dr. Katie Lackritz. And now for your real champion. I call this segment Maternity Care Coalition with Marianne Frey. Maternity Care Coalition is a community-based nonprofit serving Southeast Pennsylvania and Delaware, committed to improving maternal and child health,
and early education. Since 1980, MCC has served over 150,000 families with support through home visits, offering prenatal, maternal, and child care, addressing mental health, providing education about child development and safety, and connecting families with public benefits. Especially focusing on Black and Brown families in the U.S. who often face inequitable systems, so their children have the best chance to grow and thrive. At the helm is President and CEO Mary Ann Frey, a gifted leader and respected collaborator with a wealth of experience with management in healthcare, consulting. She's advised Fortune 500 companies on women's leadership. She's advised Fortune 100 companies on diversity inclusion practices, and has dedicated her life to advocating for people who are marginalized. Welcome, Mary Ann.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ritchie. It's such a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, first of all, this is Mary Ann to Mary Ann, for starters. I love your name. I love the way you spell it. And I love that we are fellow St. Joe Hawkettes, just for the record.
Go Hawks!
So this is, MCC is magnificent, and it's truly a labor of love for you. Mm-hmm. What's the most important mission in your mind?
You know, the mission of MCC in its entirety is to improve the health and well-being of pregnant women and parents and families, and to enhance school readiness for children ages 0 to 3. But for me, the most important component of that mission is to be responsive to those we serve. We really, for the last 5 years or so, since I've been at the helm, I've been at the helm about 6.5, 7 years, we've built on the incredible work of our founders. And, you know, we've actually clarified exactly how we plan to build this equitable future. And that's what really gets me excited, is that we really are focused on being responsive to those we serve, as opposed to dictating what we think they need. So, that's what I think is most important as well.
Well, and I think, too, you said it the other day when we first chatted, that you're forming an alliance to transform people's fear, and fear can lead to anger, and you're bringing them hope. And there are a lot of organizations that provide services, but one of the things I love about MCC is advocacy. You go and you basically hold people's hands, and that's a whole different layer. And the other thing I learned the other day is your own beautiful history. I could have talked to anybody from MCC, but DNA, your DNA has service in it. Your dad and mom were missionaries. Interestingly, from Jamaica, they came to the States, if I'm right, in the 1950s to start Bible clubs all through the South. Mm-hmm. Then they ventured into Canada and they settled in North Philadelphia. So service is in your blood. You were at the kitchen table reading the Bible when you were 4 years old. How did that lead you to a life of service, especially this focus on needy mothers and children?
First of all, Mary Ann, I am amazed that you remembered all of those details. Every one of them was correct. And, you know, my story from the mission that still sits at 6th and Green in North Philadelphia it does really set the context for what I'm doing today. As a young person, you know, okay, we moved. I was fortunate to get a great education on the main line, but I ended up with a teenage pregnancy that resulted in a stillbirth, which really haunts me even to this day, but also allows me to relate very closely with the families that we serve. So I'm very grateful for the work that I've been able to do, and it's been full circle. And working with those that are experiencing homelessness, and knowing that now MCC is really expanding our services to include economic security, really makes it emphasizes how important it is to really focus on those basic needs that families have. And that's what MCC does.
But you know, that's what makes you a champion, because there are people who suffer and become bitter. You lost a baby, and it's Mother's Day weekend. This is the time we celebrate babies. So you are putting your whole energy and love and time into helping other mothers get through their pregnancy safely, have their babies, love them, and embrace them, and try to minimize the difficulties and get those children off to a good start. What's your takeaway message for our listeners?
That pregnancy, birth, and parenting is transformative. then because of that, it deserves a community of care. And that's exactly what MCC does. We support, we again focus on the fact that the parent is the expert in their own birth journey and their own parenting journey. And I just want to leave our listeners with this intended impact at MCC. We are committed to ensuring that parents in Southeast Pennsylvania and Delaware are impacted by racial and social inequities have every opportunity to birth with dignity, parent with autonomy, and raise babies who are healthy, growing, and thriving. And if you really want to join us, please visit us at www.maternitycarecoalition.org, or you can call us at 215-972-0700.
Beautifully well said. Happy Mother's Day to you. Happy Mother's Day to all the families that you're helping and all of our listeners. But I also want to salute you as our champion this week, Marian, but also your incredible parents. Look what they did. It wasn't easy to start. Yeah. And as we can guess, they didn't come with a lot of spare change. And they built such a beautiful community and had six children. And thank all of you for serving. Your two brothers went to West Point. Your sister's a doctor. And look what you're doing. You could have gone in a lot of directions. And God bless you for your work. And we salute all the incredible parents at MCC and all the staff of more than 180 people at MCC. You're real champions.
Thank you so much, Marianne, my namesake. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to lift up MCC. And I wish everyone a wonderful Mother's Day, or however you identify yourself.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
We are back here on Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Katie Lackwitz from Jefferson Obstetrics and Gynecology, superstar Dr. Katie Lackwitz. Katie, we've talked in depth about preparing for pregnancy and during pregnancy with medications, alcohol intake, all those things that seem obvious, but it was really good to clarify. Let's talk a little bit about infectious disease and really fine-tuning to minimize risk to mom and baby. What are those things that you check for routinely that may be infectious?
So someone who's planning a pregnancy or who's seeing us while they're already pregnant, we're going to do a basic panel for infectious diseases that could be transmitted sexually, checking for HIV with consent, syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, maybe hepatitis based on their risk factors. And then getting that panel either before pregnancy so we can treat and communicate with partners ahead of time, or during pregnancy at least two times, because we know that to achieve a pregnancy, if you're in a heterosexual heterosexual couple not using IVF, you're going to have some exposure. We want to make sure everyone is safe and then either treated appropriately or notified appropriately to reduce any risks.
And something else people wouldn't think about, but we talk about infections that are common. If you have a kitty cat, we don't want the pregnant mom to be changing that litter box, right? Because of toxoplasmosis.
Right. Yeah. There's a little bacteria called toxoplasmosis that's never great to have exposure to, but if you're pregnant, can be especially dangerous. And so we'd recommend your partner change the litter box or your family member change the litter box through the whole pregnancy. And lots of hand washing before cooking or eating any food. Lots of washing vegetables and fruits and all those things.
So then we want to talk about the family's environment. Is it safe? Are there any other than a litter box, chemicals or substances in the home or workplace that could hurt the unborn baby? Because I know a quote I found, houses built before 1978 may have lead paint chips that could, well, hurt the baby after the baby's born, but is the water clean? Does the couple have finances planned for
delivery bills, and when the baby comes? Let's talk about that a little bit.
I mean, they're all great questions. I think that when you're planning a pregnancy, I think most people have a moment to really look at finances as part of their kind of overall well-being and health. Mm-hmm. If it's a planned pregnancy and you're looking at your job, investigating with your HR department, what is your FMLA policy? What is your leave policy? What should you expect? Will you be paid or unpaid? And how long are you allowed to take? If you have a difficult pregnancy or difficult delivery, or the child has difficulties with delivery or needs care, understanding ahead of time what to expect can help with budgeting. Child care costs and child care experiences are obviously a huge national issue about how we care for our children, but part of the discussion of pregnancy can be the outcome of pregnancy and how to handle that. Looking at your household for toxins could theoretically take up a lot of energy and time. The air you breathe, the water you drink, the paint on your walls. I think there's a balanced approach to all of those things. But if you're aware you're in an older home, you can pretty easily get your walls tested for lead paint. I believe if you had lead paint, you can do things to reduce your risk by either painting over it and doing special remediation techniques, and then being aware so your child's not eating those paint chips or like playing with those vulnerable spaces. I think children also get tested for lead when they're seeing their pediatrician, because there's obviously been national crises with lead and drinking waters in different parts of the world and the country. So making sure you're being aware of that and reducing those risks wherever possible. Mm-hmm. As far as household chemicals, you know, most of them are not going to be unsafe if used as directed, but I think it's reasonable to crack a window open, keep yourself good ventilation, not to overexpose yourself to any of those inhaled chemicals whenever possible, and be aware not to mix chemicals, which can cause unexpected bad outcomes.
Good point. And cleaning solutions, maybe just use soap and water and not those kind of things that you inhale that are pretty strong.
Yeah, you want to make, you know, balanced choices. I feel like you can do a lot with soap and water. You can do a lot with household cleaners. I wouldn't go crazy on the aggressive materials, aggressive chemicals. Same answer. If your baby was in the room with you, would you use that treatment? Mm-hmm. Most of us would say no. I'd put the kid in the other room and I'd open a door, open a window, or keep him away from the fumes. While you're pregnant, you want to keep your home clean and nice. You want to take care of your environment. But it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to do it with a mask. It's okay to open a window. And it's okay to skip it. You have my permission to say, I'm not feeling it right now, or it's making me nauseous, or it's hard for me to do it physically, and that's okay.
How about diet? Are there any foods that are an absolute no-no that pregnant women should avoid?
So the most common things we discuss are things like raw pork, which can carry infectious diseases. We talk a lot about mercury. Mercury exists primarily in our fish, and so avoiding high mercury fish. High mercury fish tend to be predators. So we look at shark. You should not eat shark while you're pregnant. Tile fish. Mm-hmm. Mahi-mahi are all considered high mercury fish. And then tuna is sort of like high middle. You're allowed to have one portion of tuna every week while you're pregnant. That's an appropriate portion. But if you're an everyday tuna fish kind of kid in pregnancy, that's too much mercury. So you want to really avoid it. Interestingly, some Americans hear that advice and avoid all seafood in pregnancy because fish have lovely long-chain fatty acids and they have wonderful healthy oils for neurodevelopment. A lot of prenatal vitamins actually include fish oil to help support fetal neurodevelopment. And so you want to look at your fish as a spectrum involving things like shrimp and salmon are lovely sources of healthy proteins. They're wonderful low fat. They have excellent long chain amino acids, but they don't have the mercury. So shrimp and salmon are safe in pregnancy in, you know, reasonable amounts. Tuna, one portion a week. And any predator fish, like a tilefish or shark, should be avoided to avoid the mercury.
Swordfish, yeah.
And you can ask restaurants, you can look at the exact dosage of mercury per portions, but you know, moderation in fish.
And it's great to hear you spell these things out, Katie, because people speak in broad generalities. We should almost print this up and put it on my website so people can refer to it. Wash your fruits and veggies. I saw a thing pop up online yesterday. Somebody took a soda can and they swabbed it for bacteria right off the shelf. And then they wiped it with their shirt. And they swabbed it again. Then they wiped it with a tissue, a wet tissue. Then they washed it with an alcohol wipe. And they plated it on, you know, the gel plates in the lab. And the first one was loaded with all kinds of cooties, bacteria and fungal elements. The second one that they used their shirt wasn't as bad. The third one was pretty clean. The fourth one was clean. Same with fruits and veggies. You're not going to get off every cootie ever, but you're minimizing some risk by washing your fruits and veggies, whether you're pregnant or not. But then the other point that I was reading about, we talked earlier about your weight. Life is a balance. You don't want to gain too little weight. You don't want to gain too much weight for obvious reasons. But if you stay on a really good well-balanced diet is the word I'm searching for, kind of minimize your fats. Because progesterone is public enemy number one when you're pregnant, right? That's what slows down. I call it the assembly line. Your GI tract is I-95. And the traffic backs up because when progesterone goes up, your stomach slows. That's why you feel nausea and you vomit. And your lower half goes into slow-mo and you get constipated. If you eat those fruits and veggies and fibers, it's going to help all that, yeah?
It's so true. Progesterone is the progestation hormone. And because it's progestation, slows digestion. It causes heartburn and GERD. It causes all kinds of upset stomach and nausea. It causes you to feel exhausted and very fatigued. And it absolutely causes constipation. Plus the vitamins that we stress, the importance of these vitamins and the iron in the vitamins, they also compound your constipation. And so having a diet rich in rainbow-colored foods, looking for that rainbow of vegetables and fruits, looking for high-fiber vegetables and fruits whenever you can. And if needed, adding in supplements of fiber or things like, you know, like things like Miralax or Colace to help things keep moving yes. through your system. Constipation in pregnancy leads to hemorrhoids. Low iron leads to anemia, right? Nausea, vomiting leads to trouble gaining weight. Overconsuming of carbohydrates leads to diabetes. And so you are constantly being told, avoid, avoid, do this, do that. Looking at your plate as a rainbow, looking at your plate as an opportunity, feeding yourself the way you would feed, not feed a child like portion size, but I think about my toddlers when I had toddlers. They would say to me, I want mac and cheese for dinner. And I'd say, sure, you can have a portion of mac and cheese with a portion of chicken with delicious carrots and a lovely fruit. And for dessert, a special little something sweet. That's a well-rounded plate with a beverage of milk or water. Mm-hmm. When you look at pregnancy, people say to me, oh, I just crave Doritos, or I only want a hot dog. And I say, I hear what you're saying. You want, your body's calling out for something, and that's okay. You can have a portion of that. It's allowed if it's prepared properly and it's within balance, but please add to it vegetables and fruits, whole grains whenever possible. Keep your beverages focused on waters and nutritious beverages. Please avoid the sweetened ones and the sugar drinks. If you're calling out for soda, maybe you want an energy boost. You want a little something, but look for energy from other sources.
Well, and you mentioned two things. We talked earlier about being on folate. Folic acid is the oral prep. And iron. Iron, we know, constipates us. So add that to the pro-gestational hormone. am I right? The Food and Drug Administration say you should only need an additional like 300 calories a day to maintain a pregnancy. Yeah. That's not a whole lot. So
it's less than you think. Yes. It's one granola bar.
Oh, wow.
And that's, you know, I know it because I was pregnant. I was looking at all the labels. Like, it's only one granola bar a day. Early in pregnancy, the first trimester, you really don't need to add many calories at all. You might have different hungers and different fightings with the nausea. You might adjust your diet. Second trimester, you can definitely add calories as you feel ready to, and, you know, being aware that you're growing and developing a human inside of you. And then 300 calories a day is the sort of daily average you need for pregnancy. But you don't want to think about eating for two or eating extra. Looking with your provider and your doctor at your overall weight goal gains, and then looking at your pregnancy budget and how you spend those weight goal gains. You know, for a healthy weight person, pregnancy weight gain is 25 to 35 pounds. If you're underweight, they might say 35 to 45 pounds. And if you're overweight, it might be 10 to 20 or 0 to 10 pounds. But that's your budget to spend for the whole pregnancy.
Yeah.
Working on your activity, staying active, and eating balanced at all times.
And even that, a couple of don'ts in pregnancy, don't avoid wearing a seatbelt because your belly's big and you think you're going to crush the baby. Don't forget, with all the things you're mentioning, talk to your provider if you have questions, the type of exercise, what things you should not do. If you have a history of premature labor or bleeding, or you're bleeding recently, or cervical problems, or you get dizzy, or a fast heartbeat, or hypertension, those kind of things, you want to be really careful what type of exercise, especially if you're not used to it. And you want to avoid strenuous things like horseback riding, water skiing, et cetera. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Right. So it comes back to the partnership model. We want you to have the healthiest pregnancy possible, and that includes taking good health care of yourself. Things like walking, a 20-minute walk a day, have been very well shown to reduce backache in pregnancy, to increase vaginal delivery rate in pregnancy, help the babies become head down in pregnancy, and they're not harmful for almost everyone. But things like horseback riding, scuba diving, rock climbing, circus arts, those are not ideal for pregnancy because the risk of falling and injuring the placenta or the pregnancy are very high. And so we want to have everyone active and healthy, but working with their team to provide a model that works for them, and finding small interventions. You know, if you're sitting all day at a desk, we're going to encourage you to get up and walk around. If you're on your feet all day at work, we're going to encourage you to find a way to sit and get breaks more often, finding that balance between those things that you're having good health through your whole pregnancy.
And even if you may have been a runner or you've exercised in the past, you don't want to be doing vigorous exercise in heat, humid weather, because as pregnant women, am I right, we're less efficient at exchanging heat and you're more likely to retain it. I don't know. So you don't want to do hot baths or saunas either, right?
So right. So overheating your core can be unsafe in pregnancy. It can lead to specific birth defects, but that's really from hot tubs, jacuzzis, and saunas and dehydration.
Got it.
Working out is unlikely to cause core temperature elevations unless you're doing it in extreme ways. I've had patients who run Broad Street. I've had people do marathons. We can do all kinds of exercise safely in pregnancy.
Good.
But the important thing is doing what you're comfortable doing and listening to your body, not overdoing it and not pushing through pain. Hydrating, urinating, stretching. And as your body changes, your center of gravity is going to also change. So being aware of your shoes, your surroundings, and your safety at all times.
Boy, shoes is such another important topic, because if you're not comfortable and you have swelling in your feet, or if your feet are bothering you and you're not holding your back properly, they all, the knee bone's connected to the thigh bone. Yes.
I tell everyone I need ugly, ugly shoes. I mean, get me some ugly, comfortable shoes. If they're cute, they're not comfortable. If they're strappy, adorable, I'm sure they're lovely for like a treat. But if I'm hearing someone having backache, pelvic ache, pressure in pregnancy, we look at the shoes as an important part of that general health for the whole person.
And two quick things. You want to get that car seat ready to bring the baby home. When the baby comes home, the baby's going to sleep on his or her back, not on the belly like in the old days.
Right.
Quickly, Tylenol was in the news lately because they thought it could bump the risk for autism or ADHD in the baby. True, true, and unrelated. Tell us about that if you would.
Tylenol is still something we consider safe in pregnancy to treat aches and pains and fever as needed. Small doses with your doctor's approval throughout pregnancy are not considered a risk factor. If you're taking them chronically or at high doses, we don't think that's safe or recommended. And in the studies on Tylenol, they included fever for Tylenol and aches and pains for Tylenol. Fever is an independent risk for a lot of neurological conditions of your offspring. And so if you're taking Tylenol for fever, I think it was a confounded data. We'll get more information in the future. But for right now, with your doctor's advice, small doses as needed to get through, it's completely reasonable.
So for listeners, the study that said, oh, gee, people who took Tylenol caused problems in their babies, but it was probably the fever they were taking the Tylenol for that hurt the baby, and not if you were taking Tylenol for a headache or a twisted ankle, that should be okay. Let's take a little break. When we come back for your weekly prescription, our wrap up with Dr. Katie Lackland.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We have learned so much and really great practical information from our friend and colleague Dr. Katie Lackritz from Jefferson Obstetrics and Gynecology about plans to make before you even conceive, and women of childbearing age, primary care docs should be reminding them to take folic acid to prevent birth defects if they should happen to conceive. Because as you said, Katie, half the time, half of pregnancies are unexpected or unplanned. And so, gee whiz, if the benefit of something like folic acid, which is so easy and inexpensive, helps that developing baby in the first 26 days, and you don't find out till day 40 or 50, you've lost the chance to maximize safety for the baby. What are your other take-home messages? We want to talk about safety as well. We talked about safety with cat litter and stumbling and that kind of thing. What else about safety do you want to emphasize?
I think there's a couple other areas to emphasize. I think one is the importance of partnership. Partnering with your healthcare provider, your OBGYN, your delivery team, so that they know you and they help you have the best pregnancy for yourself. This has been very general advice that applies to most people, but we can individualize the care around you and your needs, you and your community, and you and your delivery outcomes, you and your pregnancy outcomes. And that partnership is key and critical. So when you know that you are pregnant, calling your provider to make an appointment early. early when you're planning a pregnancy, coming in before pregnancy to do screening and healthcare work before you achieve pregnancy, looking at all the things we already discussed, and then looking for safety. We talked about the safety of your home environment, but safety of your relationships and safety of your home can be more than lead paint and more than drinking water. It can also be your partners and your loved ones. You know, women and people who have childbearing potential around the country, around the world, are at risk of intimate partner violence and domestic violence. And prior to pregnancy and prior to children being born is a really important time to take stock of safety, looking at your relationship, the communications, the safety for you yourself. Pregnancy is a high-risk time for intimate partner violence and domestic violence, and it's something that we see too often, and it's really hard to handle and really stressful for obviously our patients and for us as providers. We want to emphasize partnering and safety to make sure that you're safe through your whole pregnancy. Also, I include in that guns. If there's firearms in your home, making sure that they are safely secured and you know where they are and how they're stored prior to delivering and prior to bringing a child home. Those are things that you can take, they're measures you can take into your own hands to either get rid of firearms before you deliver or make sure they are safe. They are at risk to be used against people in the household and at risk to be used by accident, by children. We know there's way too much violence in our communities, and firearm ownership and firearm safety is a way you can be make sure you're being taking care of yourself and your loved ones, you know, before and during and even after pregnancy.
And, you know, Katie, we talked earlier about partnership with your provider and family members who are there to help you. But the other thing is there's so many wonderful programs in the community. As we heard earlier, our real champion this week is Maternity Care Coalition. Just a myriad of programs to support with advocacy, education, and resources. If you're really, if your finances are an issue or your safety, all those things, there are, ask your doctor, there are so many great programs out there. We're doing the through the month of March, April, and May, our program on this show, Diapers for Darlings. I never want to think that something like diapers would make it a struggle for a mom to pick whether to buy more diapers or food for her other children. That just should not exist in America. So Diapers for Darlings, You Give Goods, we'll talk about that later. And your department, Department of OBGYN at Jefferson, tell us about that real quickly.
Well, we're thrilled to be providing pregnant care for people all over the city of Philadelphia. We have offices in Methodist, at the Navy Yard, at Center City offices, and at the Art Museum offices. We're working with our health districts and our midwife cares and colleagues to provide safe care at Jefferson. But we also do fundraising for menstrual supply drives, for patients who need help. We have social workers and support available for those who need assistance, because we want to make sure each person has the best care and the best outcome possible for themselves.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Katie Lackwitz, you are so wonderful as a colleague, as a physician, as a teacher, and as a mother. So happy Mother's Day to you. Enjoy your day.
Same to you. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen again on Audacy.com. AUDACY. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross. And a very happy Mother's Day to all of our mothers here and those in heaven. Remember, tell your mother how much you love her. And if you're at odds, take time to make amends before it's too late. And please help a needy mother celebrate her Mother's Day. Donate to Diapers for Darlings. Website, yougivegoods.com. That's yougivegoods.com. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Audacy. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care.
So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.